Gentlemen, our first argument is Mohammed Al-Tabili versus Holder. Ms. Bennett.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jennifer Bennett. I represent Mr. Mohammed Ahmad Al-Jabali. This is a very serious case in which a man's life is in danger. Mr. Al-Jabali is a 64-year-old native and citizen of the country of Lebanon. He came to the United States on December 22nd of 2000. He sought adjustment of status before the Immigration Service under Section 245I of the law. Unfortunately, he did not qualify because you had to have entered the United States on or before December 21st of 2000. His flight was delayed. He was supposed to arrive on the 20th, but he arrived on the 22nd. Therefore, a notice to appear was issued. He was placed in deportation proceedings. In 2007, in 2008, at a master calendar hearing, his counsel at the time brought to the judge's attention the fact that they had received new information regarding his daughter's abduction, or her kidnap, in Lebanon, and Mr. Al-Jabali sought to apply for asylum. The judge ordered counsel to complete an asylum application on that date, which the client and counsel did complete and file with the court. That was on May the 19th of 2008. In that application, Mr. Al-Jabali stated the sole basis for his asylum claim was his daughter's abduction in Lebanon, which he had just learned of weeks prior in a phone call from his daughter Gada. His daughter Rabid is the one that was kidnapped.
Where's the daughter now?
As far as we know, the daughter is still being held. Her exact whereabouts are unknown, but we believe that she is still in Lebanon.
Why is the rest of his family there?
The rest of his family is there because he was the one that spoke out against the Hezbollah group, and he's the real target of the group. And he left in order to let his family resume their life.
But if his daughter was abducted, isn't the rest of his family in danger?
They are in danger. And
why didn't they come to the United States with them?
Because he came here thinking that he would be able to adjust status and bring his family over. And they have not had a means or a mechanism to get here since that time. They're certainly scared. But he came alone because he's the primary target. And if he's there, they're certainly going to be harmed. And as we see, the daughter already was kidnapped.
Now, one of the things you argue is that the immigration judge and the BIA committed an error of fact, because they didn't consider the daughter's kidnapping, but there was much discussion about her kidnapping and the discrepancies as the judge weighed his credibility.
There was, Your Honor, and that's the point. We don't feel that it was a discrepancy. We feel that the board committed the error of fact and overlooked the bigger picture. The fact is that the sole basis for his asylum claim was that his daughter was abducted in May of 2008. He clearly explained that he received a telephone call from Gadad, one of his daughters, explaining that something serious had happened to another sibling, to one of her siblings, one of the girls in the family. He knew from the history, he testified that he was beaten himself, taken into custody and beaten in 1989 by this group, and he's known that they've hassled his family ever since, looking for him. So he explained that he inferred from that phone call that his daughter had been abducted, even though Gada could not technically use the word abducted on the telephone call or kidnapped, because she knew that her phone call was being monitored and there was eavesdropping occurring. So he testified that that's when he knew. Then later, the first time he actually saw it in writing is when Gadad wrote him a letter and sent to him in September of 2008. And attached to that letter from the daughter was also a letter from the abductor himself, which he had written to the family, threatening to teach Mr. Al-Jabali a lesson. And so the discrepancy that the court and the board are pointing to, or they believe that it's a discrepancy between whether he actually knew in May or whether he actually knew in September. But we feel, Your Honor,
can't you? I mean, that's. I agree that it could be considered to be ambiguous, but is it more unreasonable to accept what the administrative law the immigration judge decided rather than what he claims? It seems to me you can choose one. That's what I'm saying. Both are believable.
Possibly. Both are believable, but that was the sole... We don't actually think that it's believable, Your Honor, because that's the sole basis of his claim. In May of 2008, he wouldn't have sought asylum if he hadn't known about the abduction or the kidnapping then. So I think the court is looking at this nitty-gritty, particular, trivial nuance between whether it was the phone call or the letter, but he knew at both points. He inferred from the phone call. He knew concretely when he saw it in writing in September. But that overlooks the whole bigger picture. This man's life is in danger. He's been beaten. His family has been threatened. They've been followed. His daughter has been kidnapped. Lebanon is a very unsafe and dangerous country right now.
Right now, this all started back in 89, though, so we're talking about she was abducted 6 years ago, right?
In 2008, Your Honor.
Does that make it six years ago?
Correct. Yeah,
There's been no change in the conditions in Lebanon during that period of time?
There has not been substantial change. In fact, things have gotten worse. And in fact, Your Honor, prior counsel, during the individual hearing on the merits of his case in March of 2012, submitted documentary evidence, articles and letters and explanations of the conditions and how poor they still were at the time of the hearing in 2012. You can read the newspaper or read Google today, and you still see the reports of things like this happening. So we believe, going back to the point of when he actually knew, we believe that the board and the judge are clearly overlooking that fact, and the board has an obligation when we ask them to reconsider their decision to not simply look at the prior arguments and say that they were unpersuasive, but rather to actually look at the fact that we're pointing out what they've overlooked, the bigger picture. The bigger picture clearly makes sense that Mr. El-Jabali knew of the kidnapping.
What about all his false statements he made about where he was?
Your Honor, those
years?
Sure, Your Honor. Those statements, he was a little bit unclear on the record.
I don't think it's unclear. I think it's false.
We respectfully disagree, Your Honor. He explained in the record, if you look closely at it, it says there's a discrepancy between 1990 and 2000 where he was, or 1992 and 2000. Right. He explained in the testimony that he had been hiding for a while. He had maintained his permanent residence, so to speak, with his family in Lebanon, but he had been traveling from city to city, from country to country. So in his mind, he's a little bit unclear, it seems, of where he should tell the court that he was actually located during that time, but he maintained that he was in Lebanon for that period of time, but he was hiding. He was from country to country. He was from city to city.
Well, how could he be in Lebanon if he was moving from country to country?
I see that my time is up, if I may go ahead and answer, Your Honor. He was moving from country to country, but he wasn't moving his permanent address. He was hiding, so he was moving around. Well, he figured out what he was going to do to protect himself and his family.
But the immigration judge went into great detail in looking at the corroboration for his testimony and was very specific in terms of issues that she had of these documents not being reliable, the documents being inconsistent.
Your Honor, we understand. For some reason, the judge and the board in this case seem to be nitpicking at very particular details. As you're aware, in most asylum cases, it's difficult for these individuals whose lives are in danger to contact people back home, to get letters, to get proof. He got that. He had far beyond what a typical asylum applicant would provide, and yet the board and the judge are looking at such particular, minute, trivial...
What is the evidence of the abduction?
The evidence of the abduction, there was a telephone call that he testified to. There was the letter from the daughter, Gada, which was provided to the court. There was the letter from the abductor himself, the member of the group.
And that was a copy of the letter, right? The original, he said that he had the original in his possession. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But he submitted the copy to the court?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Was there a complaint to the police?
There was not a complaint to the police because the police were unable and unwilling to protect him. They were involved and on the side of the Hezbollah, and they were not willing to protect him. And I see that my time is up, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mack?
Good morning. May it please the court, Greg Mack, counsel for the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. The court should deny this petition for review because it involves a motion to reconsider the board's decision, not a direct petition from the Board of Immigration Appeals decision affirming the immigration judge's adverse credibility determination. Petitioner failed to file a petition for review of that underlying adverse credibility determination. So the only thing that's before the court is the Board of Immigration Appeals determination that they were not going to reconsider a rehash of the prior appeal, because the prior appeal and the motion to reconsider are mirror images of one another. The prior appeal stated that the issue was narrowed to whether the daughter, when he found out and how he found out about the daughter's kidnapping. The motion to reconsider says the same thing. The board essentially says, we don't have to rehash that. We don't have to go over that again because we reviewed that.
The difference is the phone call was at best cryptic that something happened. And then the follow-up letter later on actually said that she'd been abducted. Is that, do I have that right?
Well, actually, the follow-up letter from another daughter says something bad has happened. It doesn't actually say abducted or kidnapped. It says something bad has gone on. So he says in his testimony, or he intimated that he first learned of the kidnapping from the daughter's letter, but he also said that I found out about the kidnapping in May of 2008. And the immigration judge says, well, I'm confused about that. Can you please explain it? And he fails to persuade the immigration judge. That's one issue. But the larger issue is he didn't bring that case forward to this court so that you can review it for substantial evidence. He only filed a petition for review from the denial of the motion to reconsider. So we're one step removed from substantial evidence. The standard of review here is abuse of discretion. And the board was reasonably concluded that we're not going to rehash the prior appeal when the prior appeal and the motion to reconsider are mirror images of one another. Now, to the court's question with respect to when he was in Lebanon, he says at page 394 of the record, I left in 1992 and came back over in the year 2000. He testified, however, that he was in Lebanon from 1996 to 1999. That's at 154 of the record. That also is not before the court because, again, they didn't file a petition for review of the Board of Immigration Appeals decision affirming the immigration judge's adverse credibility decision with respect to what his whereabouts and whether he was in Lebanon. The only thing that they brought forward to this court is this issue about when he found out about the daughter's kidnapping. They did not bring forward and fail to exhaust this issue with respect to whether he was in Lebanon from 1996 to 2000. So that isn't even before the court. So the court can reject that on its own because they didn't file a timely petition for review from the underlying order of removal.
One of the things that we normally, it seems to me this is an extended period of time. We even start back in 92, we're now in 2014. That's an awful long period of time for these issues about his return to be considered.
And he could have brought that case before the court as to whether the lapse in time affected his memory. He didn't bring that case to the Court of Appeals. All he brought to the Court of Appeals was this issue of when his daughter was kidnapped. He did not bring forward and contest the issue of his whereabouts in Lebanon. And that's clearly an independent reason for the immigration judge and the board to deny the application for asylum. And again, he did not file a petition for review with respect to his whereabouts. He hasn't even brought this issue forward to the court. Prior appeal is a mirror image of the motion to reconsider. The standard review is abuse of discretion. The board reasonably concluded we're not going to rehash a fact-driven issue such as adverse credibility determination.
Well, what about counsel's argument that the letter and the phone call weren't put in the proper context, that there was a basis for him to realize that it probably was a kidnapping with the phone call?
It's a different case, Your Honor, if they bring it forward on a direct appeal from the Board of Immigration Appeals' first decision. All that they brought forward is denial of the motion to reconsider. And all the board said was, you've rehashed what you said in your prior appeal. So the issue before the court is whether the board was correct on that rehash. The immigration judge is entitled to be confused and to try to clarify any confusion when the case is before the immigration judge. And certainly the petitioner can dispute that before the Board of Immigration Appeals and then on to this court from a timely petition for review. That's not what happened here. All they did was go to the board and say, look, you got it wrong about when I found out about my daughter was kidnapped. And the board said, we already considered that. This is the same argument in your prior appeal. We're not going to rehash a fact-driven issue such as adverse credibility. And that's what's before the court, is whether the board abused its considerable discretion with respect to saying, we're not going to rehash this case that we've already seen before and found unpersuasive. There's no further questions. We ask the court to deny the petition for review.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mann. Ms. Bennett, anything further?
Your Honors, in rebuttal, we would just like to point out that, no, Mr. El-Jabali did not bring a petition for review after the board's first denial. That is because it was such an obvious fact that was overlooked that it was clearly his sole basis for his claim for asylum was based on the phone call in May of 2008 when he learned of the daughter's abduction. Therefore, a motion to reconsider was appropriate because Mr. El-Jabali sought to point out that the board needed to re-examine its decision in light of the overlooked information, the phone call that was taken out of context, and that motion was brought per a matter of CERNA. There are other cases
but
as well.
But that was newly discovered evidence.
It was not newly discovered evidence, but matter of CERNA, Your Honor, as well as Gauco and Cornejouf, both Seventh Circuit cases, have pointed out that you can bring back a matter for reconsideration when the board and the judge have overlooked an argument or a fact. And I see that my time is up.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Bennett, and thank Mr. Mack as well.
Thank you, Your Honors.